Thanks for listening to Westminster Insider. We'll get started right after this.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I am inside HMP High Down. These are very, very high fences.
Britain's prison system is teetering on the edge of collapse. Prisons across the country are 98% full. Inspection after inspection shows they are places of squalor, violence, drugs. Some inmates spend 22 hours a day locked up in their cell. Nobody who works in the sector, nobody in government or in opposition, doubts that this is becoming a crisis. Yet, almost nobody talks about it. Prisons are, by their very nature, hidden from view. There are few votes to be found in spending money there. But prisoners are self-harming, staff are being assaulted, and almost half of people who leave prison are reconvicted within 12 months. It really is one of the biggest collective policy failures of recent decades, and I wanted to find out how we got here and what the hell can be done to fix it. So, I went to one of Britain's prisons to see what life is really like inside.
As in they don't have windows or they don't have...
They do have windows.
Okay.
They can see the outside world.
I spoke to the chief inspector of prisons, Charlie Taylor.
And I was almost knocked flat by the smell of mould within the prison. It was an incredibly unhealthy and really squalid environment.
To former Home Secretary and Tory leader Michael Howard.
Well, the government is in a difficult position because there is a lot of bone gagging. And if you are in that situation, you have to take measures that are less than ideal.
The Lord Chancellor and Justice Secretary, Alex Chalk.
There is no one sitting in this department who says everything is fantastic in prison land. It isn't.
And an ex-prisoner who's lived life on the inside.
We didn't have in-cell sanitation or in-cell electricity. You'd bucket in the toilet for the three of you and it was slop out.
From Politico, I'm Aggie Chambray. And this week on Westminster Insider, I'm taking you inside our prison system and asking the politicians and experts involved in the sector, when and how did it all go so horribly wrong?
Let's be clear. Prison works.
This is Michael Howard in 1993. Making his first Conservative Party conference speech as Home Secretary, years before he became leader of his party.
It ensures that we are protected from murderers, muggers, and rapists, and it makes many who are tempted to commit crime think twice.
The Tory grassroots loved it. It was the crackdown on crime they had been waiting for. Howard's standing ovation lasted for 1 minute, 47 seconds. But this was no run-of-the-mill conference speech filled with reheated policies and meaningless tub-thumping rhetoric. That speech marked a genuine shift. For the politicians, officials and journalists in the audience, it was a bolt from the blue.
I think they were a bit surprised. The journalists were surprised because there were 27 new policy announcements in that speech.
Howard had been given this great office of state just 5 months before the conference speech. He had spent that time talking to officials and those affected by his department's policies.
I particularly wanted to listen to the police.
This is Michael Howard speaking to me last week.
They said, it's very difficult to apprehend someone who's committed a crime. If we do, the Crown Prosecution Service are likely to say we haven't got enough evidence to prosecute. If they do prosecute, the chances are the person will be found not guilty. And if by some miracle he is found guilty, he'd probably be sent away with tuppence from the poor box. So we are beginning to wonder whether we are wasting our time. And that made a considerable impression on me. I had been told by the civil servants, immediately I got to the Home Office, they showed me this graph of rising crime. And they said crime has been rising at about 5% a year for the last 50 years. And the first thing you must understand is that there's nothing you can do about it. Your job is to manage public expectations in the face of this inevitable continuing rise in crime. So I put those two things together.
And out came that speech with a raft of new policies. More powers for police, more offences, the threshold for going to prison was lowered, and longer sentences were to be introduced.
And the last of the points that I made was that if people were found guilty of serious offences or had committed offence after offence after offence so that they were repeat offenders, they really did need to be punished. And that's where Prison Works came in.
But some campaigners put your speech as the mark of a new chapter in our story about prisons. Is that what people said to you?
Yes. And that prison population did increase quite significantly when I was Home Secretary. We had the advantage, when I started, there was some space in prisons. They weren't being fully occupied. That began to change. And we commission new prisons.
Around the same time, then Shadow Home Secretary Tony Blair declared his party was to be tough on crime and tough on the causes of crime.
What I believe that you require is to get away from this idea that you choose between either trying to prevent crime and deal with its causes or simply punish the criminal.
This created a kind of arms race on who could be more hardline on criminals that is mostly unabated to this day. As Prime Minister, Blair introduced a number of policies that lengthened sentences and consequently had a big impact on capacity. For example, he introduced the Imprisonment for Public Protection Act, which meant prisoners did not have a certain release date, and Schedule 21 of the Criminal Justice Act, which increased the minimum tariff for murder. The average sentence length in 1993 was 16 months. 30 years on, it's 22 months. And politicians no longer have the advantage of extra capacity in prisons. Jail populations have literally doubled, and prisons are literally running out of space.
If you look at the Prison Service's own projections when it comes to population, what you see is the number of places versus the number of projected prisoners coming in. Those two lines on the graph cross and they stay crossed.
This is Charlie Taylor, the government's chief inspector of prisons.
The danger is we simply won't have enough spaces to fit the prisoners that we've got. We're very concerned about what we're currently finding in prisons. And what we found over the last couple of years, particularly, is levels of lockdown in prisons that still, in many cases, resemble those which are similar to COVID. So prisoners not getting access to proper education, not getting access to work, and spending too much time locked away on the wings with just not enough to do. And the concern from this is that that isn't preparing them for release. It isn't helping to make them more likely to get a job, to get work when they come out. And the danger is that therefore they repeat the cycle of crime and the revolving door of crime and prison simply continues for those people.
It's not just that more people are being sent to prison, although they are. The overcrowding is also down to longer sentencing, an uptick in reoffending, and a backlog in trials. There are currently more than 15,000 people in prison awaiting sentencing. And all this is not helped, of course, by prison budgets being slashed over the last decade. The current government has been forced to act. 2 months ago, Justice Secretary Alex Chalk announced measures he said would ease the crisis.
We are taking decisive action to make our prisons work better in the long term. We are building more prison places than at any time since Disraeli was speaking from this dispatch box. We are rolling out hundreds...
First, new powers to remove foreign criminals from British prisons. Second, most criminals sentenced to less than a year will not go to prison. Instead, they'll be fitted with a GPS tag and serve their time in the community. And third, some of the least serious offenders to be released 18 days early.
Now, at the moment, the government has brought in an early release scheme, which means that in some jails, in effect, if the bath is about to overflow, they can take out some scoops of water and release a few prisoners. And we'll also see when the changes to sentencing comes along where there's a presumption of getting rid of shorter sentences. But nevertheless, particularly with the amount of prisoners we have on remand at the moment, and that remand population has grown significantly, partly because of court delays and COVID backlogs, but also because of the length of sentences, the increase in sentence lengths that we're seeing as well, what that means is our prison population will continue to grow despite some of the changes that the government has brought in. Those pressures will remain.
Taylor inspects prisons on a weekly basis. In the last year, he has issued an unprecedented 5 urgent notices. This is when there is a case of such immediate significant concern that the inspectorate writes to the Secretary of State, who then has 28 days to respond.
Squalid conditions, particularly in our Victorian inner city reception prisons, are sadly not uncommon at all. So these are jails that were originally built to house a much smaller population than they currently hold. So many prisoners are doubled up in cells that were originally designed for one person. And what that means is not only are prisoners in incredibly cramped conditions, not only are prison officers rushed off their feet, but also these prisons haven't got enough spaces for prisoners to do any sort of meaningful types of activity, which means they're spending their time, in many cases, locked behind their door for 22 hours a day. Or if they are getting out, they're simply getting out onto the wing and maybe having a little bit of exercise and then being locked away again.
And can you describe to me the worst thing you've seen or the thing that shocked you the most in the last few months?
Well, I think the biggest concern I had was recently an inspection of Bedford Prison. The thing that really struck me at Bedford, it was just one particular case, is they have a wing there for young adults. And I found one cell, I opened the door, and I was almost knocked flat by the smell of mould within the prison, within that particular room. And there were 3 boys who were in there. They were scared that they were going to get beaten up by other prisoners. So they were spending almost all of their time locked into that cell. The smell of mould was almost overpowering. And I got them to show me the back wall of the cell. And it was covered in patches of black mould. It was an incredibly unhealthy and really squalid environment. And these were 3 young men who had the rest of their lives in front of them. But the danger was that they were being prepared not for a life of succeeding when they came out, but for a life of surviving in prison.
Days before I visited HMP Highdown, a report from Taylor's inspectorate came out. It talked of extreme problems with drugs, violence, debt. Some prisoners were spending all day locked up.
It's a difficult prison. Unfortunately, it doesn't have enough spaces, activity spaces, for the prisoners who are there. But the second big challenge that we found at Highdown, particularly, was the amount of drugs that were getting into the jail. So lots of prisoners felt unsafe as a result of it, because where you get drugs, what you also get is prisoners getting into debt in order to buy drugs. And when prisoners are in debt and they don't pay up, then those debts are settled by violence. And that was having a corrosive effect on the whole of the environment.
Charlie Taylor's report found that a third of prisoners at Highdown tested positive for drugs. That's one of the highest rates across England and Wales.
So if you sign in at the desk there, they'll give me a ring.
Hi.
Hello.
During my tour of Highdown, I spoke to some of the prisoners. One told me that the psychoactive drug Spice is an issue in this prison, but added it's a problem in every prison. A former inmate from a different prison, David Breakspear, told me what it's like.
It's worse than heroin, it's worse than crack, it's a nasty, nasty drug. And once it gets hold of you, it just turns you into someone that you don't recognise, and that's what happened to me. And the problem with that is so many drugs, especially, I mean, spice. Considering I was smoking heroin and crack on the out, I actually thought, well, I'll be able to control it. And for a couple of days, I did. And then in no time at all, it controlled me.
How do people get it in?
Well, there's loads of ways of getting in. Over the wall, through visits, in the mail, through what's known as Rule 39. That's legal mail that they're not supposed to open. Staff, corruption. It's been a battle that they've been fighting ever since they've had prisons.
Back in Highdown, a prisoner who didn't want his name to be used talks to me about the drug problem in the prison.
Drugs is a case of anywhere, society and prison, isn't it? So
he's been in prison for a drug offence for 3 years and has 16 months to go.
I don't see much bullying, but there will be cases just like these in life.
And do you see any kind of violence?
I have done seen violence, but not on over the top. But yeah, I have seen violence, but not on that. It worries me. But sometimes it's just people who are actually scared themselves and don't know how to liaise or don't know how to communicate. So their way of just shouting out or making themselves look bigger.
Highdown's prison governor, Emily Martin, said she is seriously concerned about drugs.
So I think any governor that isn't is probably not being realistic. You know, a number of people are here because they have drugs offences. A number of people are here because they will have had in their past addiction issues. So it's always something that we are mindful of, and we've got a big old footprint and we struggle with being able to keep out some of the ingress of those drugs at times. However, that doesn't mean that every single day we aren't trying to do our best to make sure this is as stable and as drug-free as possible.
There was talk about debt, fear, violence. Do you see a lot of violence here?
So there's more for us to do around some of that stuff. People will report not always feeling safe because of that debt. They may well be in fear. And it's down to me and my staff to offer as much as possible a safe and decent regime. If we don't work with hope, we've got nothing. And I am hopeful for these guys, I really am.
One of Charlie Taylor's report's chief concerns about Highdown is the lack of purposeful activity for prisoners. This is something they are now trying to improve. Because there's a direct link between those that engage in meaningful activity in prison, whether that be education or work, and a lower rate of reoffending outside prison. When prisoners reoffend, it is costly. Prison costs almost £50,000 per year per person. Now, in Highdown, there are around 1,200 prisoners here at any one time.
What we don't have is enough full-time places at the moment in terms of work and activity. So we've got a bit of a part-time regime. So we're trying to offer as much as we can, maximising what we can with the resources that we've got.
It's a network rail course where we do 3 weeks in the classroom.
Hiya!
Hey, got film crew!
Not quite. And what they do, we teach them different roofing genres.
Oh, into the Clink canteen.
About 20 of the lucky inmates are offered a job at the on-site restaurant Clink.
It's all restaurateurs, chefs who've worked in the hospitality industry on the outside. We give them qualifications in food safety, barista skills, customer service skills, basics of nutrition.
The ones involved in this programme, their reoffending rate is about half that of the national average. Prisoners Lewis and Harish, both dressed in grey prison tracksuits, are both restaurant employees.
How are you doing?
Lewis has been in jail for 15 months on a drug offence. He's about 5'10", with short black hair, and looks like he's in his 20s. He's due to be released next month.
And do you think this will help you to kind of get a job when you leave?
Definitely with the social elements and whatnot reintegrating into society, whereas a lot of us haven't worked for a few years. Their skills you took from this, the qualifications, 100%, yeah.
The restaurant is softly lit with exposed brick and leather-panelled seating. If I hadn't just walked through four 20-foot gates to get in here, I might have mistaken it for a trendy location in East London.
It's nice being down here. The staff are friendly.
Harish is slightly shorter than Lewis and a bit older, probably in his 30s. He too has short black hair. He's been in on a fraud offence since August. He's due to be released next October.
we see all these managers, governors coming down as well, which is rare, because we don't see governors walking in the wings itself, but when they come here, it's nice to interact with them and stuff. So
how different does it feel kind of down here compared to in the wings?
Oh, very different, I think.
It's like hospital lighting, it's very dull, there's not really much happening, everyone's just leaning over a landing sort of thing. It's just quite repetitive. There's not really much to it. There's one pool table, one table tennis table, maybe a few people playing cards. Yeah, it's like a youth club for adults, really.
It's repetitive. It's the same thing day in, day out. You wake up, you come here, you go back. It's the same people, the same landing, the same activities. That's it, really.
The three men lined up to talk to me were all in prison employment. They were all engaging, polite, and appeared to be model prisoners. I asked the governor how representative these three were of the rest of her prison population.
I think that's a really interesting question, in the sense that actually a lot of the guys want to work. They want to do something that fills their time. However, you know, we have limitations on some of that. Are they representative? There will absolutely be people that will be disgruntled about kind of, you know, their lot. There's no doubt about that. But they do have opportunities if they want to take them.
HMP Highdown does not have enough prison guards, and even fewer have experience. Now, this is not a problem confined to Highdown. Across the country, there are 10% fewer prison guards than there were in 2010. And retention is bad. 15% of prison guards left their job last year, and this has led to increasing inexperience across the board and has had wide-ranging consequences, including, but very much not limited to, prisoners unable to be safely unlocked from their cells, fewer rehabilitation programmes and less effective healthcare.
Is this prison working at the moment?
I think it can be better, but actually we try really hard every single day to make it work.
You didn't say yes.
So I think we can be better. But I do think it's working in terms of the efforts that we're making at the moment.
And if you could change one thing, like click your fingers, one thing's changed, what would it be?
I'd like more resources all round. But I'm sure most governors would say that to you too.
So our prisons are overcrowded, under-resourced and full of nightmarish problems. But prison's actually not meant to be a nice place to be. And what none of that tells you is whether or not it's serving its purpose. There's a wider question on the purpose of prison that we will go into in the second half. But the purpose of Michael Howard's intervention in 1993 was to bring down crime. And he says it worked.
Those measures taken together with the help of the police and others turned the corner on crime. That notwithstanding the advice that I'd been given that nothing could be done about this inevitable rise in crime, we showed that something could be done about it, and crime started to fall. And it's fell quite significantly during my time and has continued to fall pretty much ever since.
Okay, so crime has fallen. During Michael Howard's tenure as Home Secretary, it fell by 18% and has continued falling. In the United States, Australia, Canada and France, crime also fell as their prison population grew. But the correlation is not always as clear. In other countries, crime has risen at the same time as the prison population has grown. Not everyone agrees there's a link between more people being sent to prison and less crime being committed. Some put it down to an improvement in living standards, the increased use of the internet, a drop in drug and alcohol use, and better home security. The ex-prisoner we heard from earlier, David Breakspear, went to prison 9 different times for crimes including theft, armed robbery and assault. He served his first custodial sentence aged 15. He now works for a charity called Revolving Doors, which attempts to break the cycle of reoffending. He did not see the threat of prison as enough to stop him committing crimes.
No, it's never been a deterrent. Look at America. They've got the death penalty for murder. People still commit murder.
A lot of people listening to this podcast won't have been to prison, won't kind of understand what it's like. Would you be able to kind of explain what it's like being in prison, and also whether that changed in the kind of 4 decades that you were going in and out?
There was a massive change over the years. I mean, back in sort of early 2000, we had enough staff, so you could access all the support services, you could get to education, you could get to work. There's always been a problem with overcrowding. I don't think the prison system has ever been in a position where it's not been overcrowded. If you think that cells were built for single occupancy. Now, back in 1987, when I was in HMP Canterbury, we were three to a cell. We had a bunk bed on one side and a single bed on the other. And that's when we didn't have in-cell sanitation or in-cell electricity. You'd bucket in the toilet for the three of you, and it was slop out. I mean, there's still thousands of prisoners these days that are slopping out. We can't even know that they've made it illegal.
This practice was banned in 1996. But this year, the prison minister revealed thousands of cells are indeed without toilets. And at one jail in Bristol, Charlie Taylor said some prisoners were forced to use buckets and then throw the waste from the window. After the break, I'll ask what can be done to fix the prison system. And I'll hear from the man in charge.
I accept there is a context of acute prison population pressure. But your question about, well, is that why you're doing this? No.
Stay with us.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
September 21st, 2023. A man appeared via video link at the Old Bailey. Are you guilty or not guilty? The judge asked. I am not guilty, the man replied. Now, you may have heard about this case. It was all over the news earlier this year. The man, Daniel Khalif, was accused of breaking out of Wandsworth Prison in September of this year. And then he allegedly spent 4 days on the run. He denies the charges. Now, in September of this year, there were almost 1,600 prisoners in Wandsworth, and the prison was designed for less than 1,000.
There have been issues with crowding, which I accept, which goes back for not just 5 years, or 25, 30 years, but the difference is we are doing something about it.
Well, it's certainly the case that the prison system is under pressure, so the population... prison population recently reached an all-time high.
This is Lord Chancellor and Secretary of State for Justice, Alex Chalk.
You think of Wandsworth or Pentonville and so on, where, you know, it needs to improve. And there's no doubt about it. It's not just about the physical infrastructure. It's also about the regime that people are, as it were, going through whilst they're there. That's to say, the number of hours they're being locked up in their cells, etc. So that is something that I, as a Secretary of State, I'm extremely mindful of. There are pockets of real excellence, which we should talk about, but there are also pockets which, frankly, they need to get better, and I'm absolutely determined they should get better.
And so there are pockets that are in crisis at the moment?
Well, I mean, crisis is a loaded political word. Of course it is. Look, the fact is there have been urgent notifications which have come from Charlie Taylor, and there shouldn't be a single one. I mean, I think, frankly, we have to accept you probably, there are going to be, in an estate where there are over 120 prisons, there will be some which are not performing. But there are too many urgent notifications. I absolutely recognise that. So there is no one sitting in this department who says, everything is fantastic in prison land. It isn't. It needs to improve, and we're determined to do so. But by the way, there's a huge amount of money that is going into it. So the prison build programme is the largest since the Victorian era.
In February of last year, the government announced plans to build 20,000 new prison places by mid-2020s. 5,500 have been built so far. The rest are waiting on planning permission holdups and are unlikely to meet that deadline. Building prison places is one part of the plan to deal with capacity. Another is the presumption against short sentences.
You believe short sentences don't work?
Well, look, I am, as it were, unemotional. I follow the evidence. So the overarching principle has got to be what protects the public. So my position is that where there are the most serious offenders, and that, incidentally, is those who've murdered, perhaps in the context of rape or sadistic conduct, to protect the public, you have to take them out of circulation for longer because the risk they present is so great. If they offend, it's likely to cause spectacular and horrifying damage to our community.
2 months ago, Chalk also announced that all convicted rapists would serve their whole prison term inside jail.
Where there are lower risk offenders, the best way to protect the public is to stop them offending further. And what the evidence shows, leave aside emotion, what the evidence shows is that short sentences, by that I mean sentences under 12 months, don't actually stop people reoffending. They increase the risk of them reoffending. So we have to use our heads as much as our hearts.
And so you believe, and I think your ex-prisons minister said, simply short prison sentences generally don't work. And that seems to be what you're saying there.
You can paraphrase it, short don't work in the sense that they lead people to reoffend. So the chances of reoffending, if you have been sentenced to a short custodial sentence, immediate custodial sentence of 12 months, is over 50%. If, on the other hand, that sentence is suspended with severe conditions, might be about curfew orders, it might be unpaid work orders, rehabilitation requirements, with the sword of Damocles hanging over them, comply or you'll go inside, chance of reoffending under 25%. So, you know, the statistics are clear.
I just want to talk about how you view prison. Does prison, in your view, work?
Prison does work. Of course, prison has a role. Now, you know, I'm a barrister by background. I've spent many years of my life in court prosecuting, but yes, and defending as well. And we abide by the order of the court. So, frankly, whatever my views are about a prison and whether that sentence is right, we have a constitutional obligation to uphold the order of the court.
Suspending sentences under 12 months has been knocking around as a policy idea for years. David Gawke, when he was Justice Secretary, suggested scrapping them altogether. But then Prime Minister Boris Johnson blocked it from getting over the line.
Did you get in here and just think, why did no one do anything sooner? I mean, Boris Johnson cancelled plans to lower the number of short sentences. Dominic Raab refused to contemplate plans to release some prisoners early. Did you just get in here and think, like, why have I been left with this mess?
That's a great question. No, it's not actually. Do you know, I genuinely, because I've been in this business for a long time. I was practicing under a Labour government. I was practicing under a Conservative government. And the issue of prison pressures, by the way, is not new. So
what I'm not completely clear on is these measures you brought in, suspending sentence for some people who are sentenced to 12 months or fewer. Is that because you think that that is the right thing to do, or is that because you just can't afford and you don't have the places in prisons at the moment?
It is true. There is a context. I accept there is a context of acute prison population pressure. But your question about, well, is that why you're doing this? No. This is also something which fits into a broader political philosophy that I have.
But is that where your party is? Because that's not where the public is it? I mean, 25% of people oppose the use of non-custodial sentences for non-violent offences.
Until you explain the circumstances. So, hang on, because they are all fact-specific. Because supposing you say to a member of the party, I go down to the man or woman in the Clapham omnibus, and I say, I'm talking about somebody who's 45 years old, she's a woman who has had no previous convictions, she's been a law-abiding member of society, has two children, she has developed an alcohol problem because of a very abusive relationship which broke down, she's trying to seek help for it, but she did steal from Boots, she stole £150 from Boots, and that is a serious matter, and the court are considering a custodial penalty. Now, if the option is to give a custodial penalty to say, this is a serious matter, you're going inside, but we're going to suspend it on conditions that, one, you will be punished by a curfew up to 20 hours over the weekend. Two, you must attend an alcohol awareness course. Three, you must continue to attend work, which you've been doing, and we will monitor you to check that you're doing that. Members of the public may conclude that that has sufficient punishment to mark the gravity of the offence. And bear in mind, the custodial sentence is on her record for life. They may take the view that that meets the justice of the case.
But it's interesting you say that, because does it sort of seem like actually there does need to be a shift in the way public views criminals, prisoners, the justice system in general? Do you think the public don't quite get it?
That's a great, great question. So one of the things that always struck me as a barrister, so you would be in court prosecuting a case, someone would be convicted, and the judge might say, right, members of the jury, just wait there, please, because I'm going to proceed to sentence now. But first of all, I want to hear from the defence, and I want to hear the plea and mitigation. And at that point, defence counsel will stand up and explain about the circumstances of that offender's life, maybe their childhood, maybe their relationships, maybe a battle with addiction or whatever. And by the end of that, the judge will say, well, I've heard all that, I'm now proceeding to sentence. And the sentence will be handed down is very often pretty robust. And sometimes you can see in the response of the jurors that they recognise how strong that sentence is. Now, of course, I don't go and speak to them because you don't. That's not what we do in our country. But there can be a disconnect because it's not always reported all the mitigation that exists. What you only report, of course, is the offence. So that is not intended in any way to be a criticism of the media or anything else, but there is no doubt in my mind that when you go in to explain the details of an individual offender and their broader circumstances, I think when you do that, most people would recognise that sentencing in this country, in the main, compared to other countries like France and Germany, is actually pretty robust.
England and Wales have the highest prison population in Western Europe. Compared to Germany, we jail more than double the number of people per 100,000. The measures brought in by Alex Chalk are radical, and they have split opinion. When he announced them in the House of Commons, some of his backbenchers and the opposition had questions.
May I ask him what assurances he will give the public going forward? Because I think this is about how the direction of travel goes now on this issue.
As of today, the public will undoubtedly be less safe.
Former Tory leader Michael Howard, the man behind the prison works slogan, was keen not to be drawn into the current situation, but described the new policies as less than ideal.
Well, the government is in a difficult position because there is a lot of overcrowding and they haven't got the space in which to accommodate the people the court send to prison. That's an undesirable situation to be in. And if you are in that situation, you have to take measures that are less than ideal.
We are thrilled. It's a really great initiative.
This is Andrea Kumba. She's the boss of the Howard League, a criminal justice reform charity.
It's one that the sector's been calling for some time. It's strongly supported by evidence. The only problem with it, I think, is going to be that we have a probation service that's pretty much on its knees. And people obviously need to be supported to stay away from crime. So you wouldn't want to see people, you know, breaching their suspended sentence and then getting recalled to prison.
The central question running through every discussion about prisons is this: who do they work for? And to attempt to reach any conclusion on how to fix them, you need to have a clear answer to that. The trouble is, not everyone agrees.
Protecting the public was my main motivation. Now, there's a lot of discussion about rehabilitation. I am as keen on rehabilitation as anybody. And if it is possible to do things in prison which help to rehabilitate those who have been convicted of offences, I'm all for it.
The most important thing for me is public protection.
Justice Secretary Alex Chalk again.
Everything else fits into a sort of general important sentencing principles. People have to be punished.
I'm alarmed, I have to say, by that sort of focus on punishment.
Andrea Kumba from the Howard League again.
I think there needs to be a proper public conversation about what the purpose of prison really is. And it can't be just about retribution. There needs to be a good focus on restoration of people to citizenship. And that's what will ultimately be the thing that protects the public.
Well, I think there needs to be a real debate about this.
Chief Inspector of Prisons, Charlie Taylor again.
Who we want to lock up, how long we want to lock people up for, but also what we expect from prison. What is it that we want to happen to people when they are locked up? And when they come out, what do we want them to be like?
If you were to change one thing, though, what would it be if there was one simple solution that would make a massive difference?
One of the things that astonishes me is the lack of autonomy that prison governors have. Governors are so tied up in that sort of bureaucracy that often they're unable to do the things that are really going to make a difference. Recruit and train their staff, focusing in on making sure that standards are maintained out there on the wing, making sure that things happen when they're supposed to happen, that the quality of education is good, that the quality of healthcare is good, that the quality of training is good.
I think the key thing would be for politicians of both sides to decide to step back from an arms race on prison numbers and to demonstrate courage to explain to the public that prison doesn't work in the way they think it works. So what we would really want is courage from both sides of the political spectrum to say, actually, nobody's winning with this arms race of ever longer sentences for ever more people in prison, for ever longer list of sentences, and that actually a better response to crime would be X, Y, and Z. A better investment of public money would be to invest in those things that actually stop crime.
Prevention is better than cure.
David Breakspear again, who spent four decades of his life in and out of prison.
Once someone becomes trapped in that criminal justice system, you become entrenched, and it's very difficult then to get out of it. And it's very difficult to also trust authority and trust other people then, because by the time you become entrenched in the criminal justice system, you've probably been failed a number of times, and opportunities have been missed for intervention.
As my interview with Alex Chalk was about to wrap up, I asked if he was worried.
Every day I think about prisons. The first thing I think about in the morning, it's the last thing I think about at night. I don't sit there thinking it's all a disaster, because that would be quite wrong. There are areas of unbelievably encouraging practice. Is there things that I want to drive down, like drugs? Of course I do. The central thing to do is to be clear-eyed about how best to do it. Tech, we're doing that. More prison officers, we're doing that. Getting them to hang around, we're doing that. And investing in the estate, we're doing that to a greater extent than ever before, or certainly since the Victorian era. And that, I think, seems to me a coherent programme for improvement.
Do you have enough time?
Do I have enough time? There's never enough time. But you know what? I get up early and I go to bed late.
That may not be enough. If the polls are right, Alex Chalk may only have less than a year left in post. And after that, it could become someone else's problem. An 11th Justice Secretary in 14 years. But whether it's Chalk or Labour's Shabana Mahmood, fixing the prisons crisis does not sound simple or quick. Some people I spoke to agreed that it's good financially and for society to focus on rehabilitation. But neither party is likely to go into an election promising more funding, more staff, and more intervention programmes for convicted criminals. It would be a bold politician who argues for money to be spent on that rather than the NHS or schools. It was striking to hear the Justice Secretary suggest the public needs to better understand the context around sentencing. As it stands, polling shows the majority of people would support an increase in lengths of sentences. So how likely is it that public attitudes change if politicians don't argue for a different approach? Thanks for listening to this episode of Westminster Insider with me, Aggie Chambray. If you've enjoyed it, please spread the word, follow us, and maybe leave us a nice review. My X handle is at Agnes Chambray. My producers this week were Artemis Irvin and James Tyndale of Whistledown Productions. Here at Politico, my executive producer is Christina Gonzalez, and my editor is Jack Blanchard. Jack will be back with you next week, and I will be off for my Christmas holes. See you in 2024.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.